Bhagavad Gita discussion. So we're going to discuss Bhagavad Gita. And as you see from the image on the screen, we're going to be discussing some of the early verses. Verses 1 through 3 from chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. And a few things first about chapter 13. It comes after chapter 12. Any questions? So, chapter 12 ends the middle section of Bhagavad Gita. The middle section of Bhagavad Gita is delineation of the process of bhakti, or at the final verse of chapter 6, the uttama, or topmost yoga system of all the yoga systems, is bhakti. So the middle six chapters are describing bhakti. In fact, that's the title of chapter 12, summarizing the process of bhakti yoga, devotional service. And in that chapter, there's different stages or levels of bhakti up to the topmost stage. And in that chapter 12, verse number 7, Krishna says, those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me. Note how many times he says mayi. It's person. First person singular. Not impersonal, because that comes at the beginning of chapter 12. Arjuna wants to know from Krishna, which is better. Worship of your impersonal, worship of your personal form. Very direct question. Krishna gives a very direct answer. Worship of a personal form. It's best of all, because he already said it at the end of chapter 6, that devotional service is the best. So here he's delineating. Those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, Krishna. Having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pratha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So, chapter 13 is Krishna is going to describe that knowledge by which one who takes shelter becomes delivered from birth and death to that position that he described, the position of devotional service. That's chapter 13. Another appreciation of chapter 13 is it's specifically Sankhya, an earlier chapter 2, Krishna described also Sankhya. What is that? Starting from the verses where he's describing about the soul and the distinction between the soul and the coverings of the soul, or matter. The divisions of matter and spirit, Sankhya. And he explicitly says that in chapter 2, text 39. He says to Arjuna, now that I've described to you Sankhya, the study of matter and spirit, now I'm going to describe another type of yoga, Buddhi yoga. So there is one Sankhya section, chapter 2, those early verses, up to verse 38. And then there's another Sankhya section that's in chapter 7. For those who like to know how Bhagavad Gita is put together, chapter 7. In three verses, Krishna describes matter, spirit, and the controller of both. The eight separated material energies aside from them, the spiritual energy, the individual soul. And then Krishna says, they're both my properties, and I'm the Purusha of those properties. So Prabhupada has called this chapter, this is also Samkhya, same nature, enjoyer, and consciousness. So the enjoyer, that's Krishna. He's the Purusha. But then there's this imitation Purusha position. Those of you that are familiar with Krishna book, you know who is Pondraka. Pondraka. Pondraka was imitation Vishnu. He paced out an extra two arms. And he declared himself Vishnu. And he sent a messenger to Mathura and told Krishna, stop calling yourself Vishnu or I'll have to destroy you. And Krishna sent a messenger back saying, I tell you what, he doesn't have to come to destroy me. I'll go there and destroy him. And Krishna destroyed him. Pondraka. First, his two arms were severed, the two extra false arms with Sudarshan Chakra. And then the talking part of his body was separated from the rest of his body. The end of Pondraka. So there's Purusha and there's the imitation Purusha. So in some parts of chapter 13, the living entity is called by the name Purusha, and we should understand it's the imitation Purusha. It's the living entity trying to be, just like the chapter title says, enjoyer. In fact, that's why we come to the material world, because we want to be the enjoyer of Krishna's prakriti. So we come to the world of Maya to try to pretend something that we're not. We have to have Maya to do that. So Maya facilitates the desire to be the imitation of the real Purusha. And then there's consciousness. And we're going to hear, I specifically wanted to speak on this verse, verse 3, because I heard Prabhupada one time, he gave a whole lecture just on one word from verse 3. So we'll get there. That's why I chose this verse, by the way. Now, the Sanskrit is actually slightly different. Nature, enjoyer, and consciousness. It's Prakriti, Purusha, Viveka, Yoga. Or more literally, distinction of matter and the Lord of matter. This is Samkhya, making this distinction between the visions of matter and spirit. So now, what's the connection between these two chapters? Again, chapter 12 ends the middle six chapters, where devotional service is described. In fact, Krishna begins that series of chapters by saying he makes a commitment to Arjuna. I'm going to explain how this topmost yoga can be performed. And he ends describing devotional service in so many different ways. Now he's describing that knowledge. This is the connection. That knowledge by which Krishna is the swift deliverer. We can move from the realm of matter into the realm of spirit. So, it begins with Arjuna asking six questions. This is like a little section summary. What are those six? They're both matter and spirit, matter and spirit, matter and spirit. Three different pairs of two. So he asks, what is Prakriti and Purusha? Matter and spirit. Gyanam and Gayam, knowledge and the object of knowledge. And Kshetra and Kshetragya, the field of activities and the knower of the field of activities. Those are the six questions. That's how the chapter begins. So now here's the first verse. Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Kshatragyam Kshatram Kshatragyam Evacha Edam Viditam Ichchami Gyanam Gyayam Cha Keshavam. My dear Krishna, I wish to know about, here's the six, Prakriti, Purusha, the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and of the object of knowledge. So there's six. This is Samkhya. Then, right away, Krishna gives his response. Idam shariram. We have that in our prasadam prayer. Sharira avidyajam. So, idam shariram kamteya kshetram iti avidyate. There's the body, and then there's the knower of the body. That's the individual soul is the knower, as consciousness, and then there's what the consciousness is conscious of, the field of activities. Krishna says, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Pretty straightforward, right? Not so complicated. So what is the field? What does that mean? Field of activity. Field of activity for a conditioned soul is the covering surrounding the individual soul. One, the soul is awarded a particular body, and the award of the body is according to these two things: our capacity, that's consciousness, how evolved your consciousness is, or the soul's consciousness is, specifically in its orientation towards dominating material nature, we get a different sharira, a different covering. And there's different propensities to try to enjoy through the instruments of the senses, the objects of the senses. So we're then given a body or a sharira or a kshetra, and then there's the knower of the field. Again, this is Samkhya. There's this clear distinction being made, as was presented earlier, chapter 2, chapter 7. Now it's more detailed. This is a feature, those of you that like to like get an overview of Bhagavad Gita. These final six chapters, well, final five chapters, then the summary chapter at the end, there's this presenting knowledge that's already been there, already been given, in a more expanded form, more detailed knowledge. Not new. It's more details. So, the kshetra gyar, the knower of the field, it's repeating the message of chapter 2, where we're not this body. But also, along with we're not this body, it tells us that there's identifications that in false ego we accept to be ourselves, the covering, to be the self, and we make then false identifications. The Sanskrit term is upadhi. So, Narada Muni, he gives this nice verse, sarva upadhi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. It's a definition of bhakti. Very simple, very crisp, very straightforward. When the upadis, sarva upadi, vinir muktam, they're not accepted, they're rejected, they're renounced. Vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam. The senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses, rishikesha. Bhakti ruchate. Very simple. So in order to that knowledge which liberates the soul requires the souls to understand their soul, but not the covering of the soul, and to reject the misidentification with the upadhis or the designations. Like, I'm an American. And some of you, at least, you're non-resident Indian Americans. We have a distinction. And there's some other Russian and whatever, different upadhis, without all detailing them all. Chapter 13, Krishna is teaching that we should become, that identify with the kshatriya and not the kshatra, not the field of activities. What happens when you do identify with the field of activities? How do you do that? What? How do you think of yourself? There's a modern art depiction of how people think. It's pretty scary. Well, it's like a series of masks. We have a mask that covers our face that puts on an identity of who we aren't. But even the face that's beneath the mask is another who we aren't. The covering is not the identity of the self. The self is the knower. In case you sometimes have to give a class to high school kids, if you're ever called upon to do that, here's something that you might want to consider doing. Prabhupada did this, so I've done this with high school classes, and it's really interesting. It doesn't have to be any youth group. You ask the youth group, okay, who's the smartest one in the whole group? Everyone starts to giggle. And they know who the smartest one is, and they all point to the smartest one. Sometimes they go like this, and sometimes they go like this. But, you know, you identify the smartest. Okay. Now stand up. Okay, now point to your arm. Now point to your knee. Now point to your head. Now point to your shoulder. Now point to you. And commonly they go like this. That's it. But wait a minute. You said, my arm, my knee, my shoulder, my head. There's the object and the possessor of the object. So who's the my? Who's the me? It's not the summation of all the parts. It's not that one. Who's the me? Who's the conscious self? Because that's what the title of the chapter is, Nature, Enjoyment, Consciousness. Kshatriya. Generally after that they giggle and they really don't get it. But it's to help one understand there is a distinction between the covering and the self. Another example given in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the garment. The body is like a garment. And after the garment becomes old and useless, you discard the garment and get another garment. You haven't become a different person, you just change clothes. So the clothes are not the person. The person is the person, and the clothes are the clothes. The covering is the covering. And the conscious self is the self. That's what Krishna is saying here in text number 2. So how does one who doesn't identify with the body function? They identify not only as a spirit soul, but they identify themselves as the servant of the Supreme Soul. There's Srila Prabhupada at an airport, standing in line like everybody else. The servant of the servant. That's how one identifies. And now we'll go on to the next verse, chapter 13, text 3. This is as far as we're going to go. So listen carefully. This is the class. Kshatriya shapi ma vidhi sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. Kshetra, Kshetragayor Gyanam, Yat Taj Gyanam Latam Mamaha. So, the lecture that I'm referring to, I heard Prabhupada speak on this verse. He was on fire verses. And he was saying that through one word, cha, Krishna has thoroughly defeated Mayavad philosophy. And the whole class was just on that. Cha is a conjunction. It's this and that. So the prior verses, he's speaking of kshetra, gya. Then that's one who knows the field is the kshetra gya. Then he says here, there's another one. There's two knowers. There's the individual, and there's the supreme knower of all fields. Sarva Kshetreshu. You should know that there is a second knower, and that second knower knows all fields. Here's Prabhupada's translation. O Sina Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That's my opinion. Krishna is very humble. But it's my opinion. So we know what is Krishna's opinion is fact. When we have an opinion, you take it or leave it. When Krishna has opinion, it's fact. And his opinion is that there's a second knower. So let's spend a little bit more time on Mayavad philosophy teaches there's only one. And the only one entity or thing is Brahman. You can't have two. Because if you have two, then their idea is, then you have duality. You can't have duality, so you only have to have one. I mean, you can only have one. There's only, so they say explicitly, this notion of a jiva is just Brahman. There's not distinct jivas and Brahman. There's only one thing, it's Brahman. So you can refer to Brahman as jiva or jiva as Brahman, it doesn't matter, it's just Brahman, because all there is one thing. So now how does someone who has that point of view handle this verse? Because Krishna says, cha. There's two. This one and that one. And this one is the knower of all fields of all activities. Now, is that any one of us? And the way the Prabhupada would say is, I know the pains and pleasures in this body, I don't know the pains and pleasures of your body. And you don't know the pains and pleasures of my body, because we're individual knowers. But there is a knower that knows all the pains and pleasures of all bodies, simultaneously. No problem. It's not information overload. He has a big hard drive. Lots and lots and lots of information. Megabyte and megabytes of information. Of all living entities in all spiritual and material realms, he's the knower. He's the supreme knower. And it is not that the individual jiva can become that. Not that one who becomes a mahatma becomes Parabrahman. We're just a jiva that's no longer entangled in matter becomes a mahatma, a great soul. We're not any bigger. There's small souls and there's big souls. It's a term. The term mahatma indicates one who's no longer entangled in the complexities of matter. But in any case, that living entity is the individual knower. And one who has a relationship with the supreme knower can know things that other individuals don't know because they know and receive knowledge from the Supreme Knower. You have like a special access code to his hard drive for some of the information, more than what one who doesn't have that password has access to. And that password is bhakti. But don't tell him, it's a secret security code called bhakti. Then you can have access to, according to whatever Krishna wants you to know, not more than what Krishna wants you to know. He can disclose to you whatever he wants to disclose to you, what you may need to know for your devotional service. Now let's explore this a little bit. Here's a depiction of what is being said. This is directly from Prabhupada's purport. The individual, or the individual soul, may be the knower of his own body, but he is not in knowledge of other bodies. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present as the super soul in all bodies, knows everything about all bodies. He knows all the different bodies of all the various species of life. Then he gives an example depicted in the illustration here. A citizen may know everything about his patch of land, but the king knows not only about his palace, but all the properties possessed by the individual citizens. So, of course, a king would know that imperfectly. But certainly he knows more than just his palace. He knows that he's the landholder, so he knows about the properties that are owned, the patch of land of the other agriculturalists who are cultivating the land. So as a king knows more than just his own palace, so Krishna, he is the knower of all of the entities everywhere. Just like here we are before the deity. And we know what our thoughts and contemplations are, and you know, whatever it is going on. But he knows everything. So when we offer prayers, he already knows. So in one sense, you don't have to pray, he already knows. But prayer is an act of devotion. You're disclosing in confidence what he already knows. And then he, according to his discretion, may disclose to you whatever he wants you to know, however he wants to reciprocate. So he's the knower of all fields of activities. So now comes this other conception. I'll spend a little bit of time with this conception of with the field of activity. That's the metaphor that Krishna is using. The body is a field of activity. So with the field, like the agriculturist is knows his field. What do you do with fields? You plant seeds and you grow the seeds and you make your agriculture and then you harvest. So an important conception of bhakti is not the fruitive notion, but the devotional notion. The devotional notion is expressed in an interesting way by some American poet, Robert Louis Stevenson. Don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds that you plant. This is, again, a play on the metaphor of the field. So Krishna knows all fields. Krishna knows how we're attempting to serve him. And the essence of service is not getting a result. Of course, we certainly want, but we do agriculture, we want some crops. That's why we're doing the agriculture. But the higher principle is just an act of devotion. And Krishna makes the crops grow or not. We're not in charge of that. That's Krishna's department. Ours is the agriculture department. We sow the seeds and cultivate them carefully and pull the weeds and so on. That's bhakti. What this message is a message of bhakti. And it's not the fruitive consciousness or conception of life. And it's not only in Vedic literature and in English literature. Here it is in biblical literature. you reap what you sow. So make sure you sow good seeds. This is the quote from the Old Testament. Be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man soweth, that he shall sow, that shall he also reap. What you sow, you should reap. This is karma. But now, how do you apply that principle of karma to bhakti? You elevate the act of sowing of seeds to expressions of devotion to the Supreme. That's all. Very nice principle. Here it is expressed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. I'll read. Those two classes of people. Those lusty after material enjoyment and dedicated to family life enjoy one type of the tree's fruits, and swan-like men in the renounced order of life enjoy the other fruit, the fruit of renunciation. One who, with the help of the bona fide spiritual masters, can understand this tree to be a manifestation of the potency of the one supreme truth, appearing in many forms, actually knows the meaning of Vedic literature. Interesting statement, isn't it? This is part of Uddhava Gita. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. So it's the same speaker of chapter 13 is speaking this verse. And there's the tree of material existence that has enjoyed the fruits and renounced the fruits. But the principle of bhakti is to turn one's attention not to either enjoying the fruits or renouncing the fruits, but to turn the attention to Krishna, who is the source of the tree. And then we can take the fruits from the tree and wish their seeds and plant more seeds and make more trees for Krishna's service. Utilizing the fruits of whatever Krishna has created according to Krishna's indication. Now here's the commentary on that verse by Baladev Vidyabhusan. Here's what he writes. And it's connected to this verse also, this verse 3 from chapter 13. He writes, this is his commentary, perfect knowledge of the constitution of the body, the constitution of the individual soul, and the constitution of the super soul is known in terms of Vedic literature as knowledge. So Krishna is saying, I consider knowledge to be the ability to distinguish between the two knowers of the field, that's the jiva and the Lord, and the relation of these two with the field, or prakriti, or the body. Anything else I consider? Ignorance. Again, the connection of this chapter 13 with chapter 12 is Krishna's now fulfilling his promise that as the swift deliverer, for one who takes shelter of devotion unto him, and described in chapter 12, can hear now chapter 13 and become situated, like he said in the beginning of chapter 12, the higher position is to be a devotee. Be a devotee and situate in the boat of transcendental knowledge and cross over the ocean of material existence. And anything else is ignorance, and it's unfortunate, but there's a lot of ignorance floating around. And there's the light or the illumination of transcendental knowledge and those situated in transcendental knowledge is rare. But here it's being presented by Baladev. What Krishna's sharing, what Krishna wants to give to Arjuna, or what Krishna wants to give to us. Knowledge that will carry us beyond this material circumstance. Almost done. In the purport, Prabhupada speaks in this way. What's being asked of Arjuna, or what's being asked of us, is to make a distinction between the painter. We see a painter painting a painting. He has a very interesting technique. Look how he's holding the paintbrush. the painter, the painting, and the easel. Now, if we say it's all one, then the painting is the painter, is the easel. But chapter 13 doesn't recommend that. It recommends a distinction. There's the painting, like, you know, it's your creation. And there's the painter, that's Krishna. And then there's the easel, that's the Prakriti. And with Prakriti, Krishna makes this place, the painting. But we can't forget the painter and just identify with the painting or think that we're the painter. We're the paintbrush. And the paints, he's moving us how he wants to move us. And we're doing, you know, Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. We're situated as if on a machine. Now, if we take advantage of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, we can go beyond conditioning of material existence. This is a very nice lesson of Bhagavad Gita. We're almost done. Just two more slides. Hold your breath, we'll be done quickly. So there are these three things, Prakriti, Jiva, and the Lord, and how though they combine together, there's no mixture of their respective qualities. They're distinct. And they are distinct as the enjoyed, the enjoyer, and the controller, as would happen in a dyed cloth. So there's the cloth, and there's the dye, and there's the dyed cloth. Similar to the painter, the painting, and the easel. Very similar. This is commentary by our acharyas. Thus, the writer of Vedanta says, Natu drishtantu drishtanta bhava. The Lord is not tainted by the material world. So, although He's the creator of this place, He's the creator of the painting, or He's the creator of the dyed cloth, He doesn't get His hands filled with dye or with paint. He's in a neutral position. He's not influenced by the modes of nature or by karma. The living entities are. We are in the conditioned state. And the final part, this is Faladeva Vidyabhusan's commentary. There is no contamination of the Lord like cloth being dyed. Though He is in contact with Prakriti and the Jiva. The Jiva, though in contact with Prakriti, never becomes Prakriti, nor does Prakriti become the Jiva. They're distinct. This is something like Madhvacharya's teachings also. Dvaitavad. There are distinctions between the living entity and nature. Nature and God. And God and the living entity and varieties of nature. Panchaveda. That's his teaching. So they're distinct. They may interact with one another, but they don't lose their identity. There are these three, nature, enjoyer, and consciousness. Now, here's a nice long list. I'm not going to read it because the print is too small. But I'll just summarize. There are various quotes from the Upanishads, several from the Svetashvatara Upanishad, that are emphasizing this same point that was just made by Baladeva. In fact, he includes it in his commentary. To support his position in his commentary, he refers to scripture, where it says these three exist distinctly. So here's a couple of them. Knowing himself to be different from he, the capital H, who inspires actions, invoking the pleasure of the Lord, that person attains liberation. Then, from Svetashvatara Upanishad, one is omniscient, the other ignorant. That's two, right? One is the controller, the other is controlled. That's two. Both are without birth. They're similar but different. The unborn Prakriti is associated with the jiva for his enjoyment. The living entity gets implicated in matter conditioned by the laws of nature, but the Supreme doesn't. Distinction. Again, Sri Vishvatara Upanishad. The pradhan is mutable. The jiva is immutable, being eternal. The one Lord controls the pradhan and the jiva. Wow, there's three. Three distinct entities. Next, this Brahman has been described as three. Wait a minute, we were told it was one. But it's three. The enjoyer, the object of enjoyment, and the inspirer. Again, Svetashvatara Upanishad. The unborn is situated with the one unborn Prakriti, which is red, white, and black, three modes, and which produces many entities of similar form. One jiva enjoys and associates closely with those forms, while another jiva, having enjoyed, gives up those objects of enjoyment. Again, the enjoyer and the renouncer, living entities. And almost the last, the Lord is the master of matter and jiva, and is endowed with all good qualities. Okay, so all those nice quotes from a very prominent Upanishad are stating. This is Baladev's summary, and I think we're done with this. From these verses, it should be understood that the Lord maintains distinction from matter and jiva, both kshetra and kshetragya, indicated by the words kshara and akshara, even though he associates with them, as will be shown by verses like 15th chapter, text 16, Bhagavad Gita. Real knowledge means understanding the separate existence of the Lord, the jiva, and Prakriti, though they mix together. End of presentation. So, knowledge, transcendental knowledge, is not the essence, it's supportive of the essence. So what do I mean by that? The essence is devotion. I'll share a little three metaphors that are used by our acharyas. When there's a procession, where does the VIP go in the procession? At the beginning, the middle, or the end of the procession? In the middle. Little practical experience of this. When the Krishna Balaram deity installation in Vrindavan took place, Prabhupada had invited the governor of UP to attend. So, before the governor came, 1 week before he came, there were government police all over the place, making sure whatever government police are supposed to do, there was going to be no problem for the governor. And then on the day of the installation, from Delhi to Vrindavan, there was a motorcade. And in those days, it was the little white ambassadors. And so in the front was the military people. In the middle was the governor. In the back was all the, ambassadors and the other VIP folks. But in the middle was the governor. So the most important person in the parade goes in the middle. Similarly, the most important portion of Bhagavad Gita is in the middle. Bhakti. And the other parts are supportive of, but not the most important part. Then the second metaphor that's used is jewels or valuables. If you have heirlooms in your family, where do you keep them? At the front gate In your backyard or in the middle of the house?
Middle of the house.
We don't even have front gates in America, but in any of those front gates, you have a wall and a little gate. You don't hang it on the front gate. Here's our heirlooms. Keep it inside the house safely. Similarly, the front part and the back part of Bhagavad Gita are the surrounding portions of where the heirloom is, the jewel of the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the message of bhakti. And the third example, as far as the important parts of the house, what's important is the doors and the windows, or the roof, or the main support beam. Main support beam, especially A-frame houses. You have to have the main support beam, without which you can have all the doors and windows and roofs you want. It doesn't do anything. But when you have the one, the main support beam, everything else comes finds its utility, becomes useful. Similarly, bhakti is the main support of the main message and theme of the entire Bhagavad Gita. And multiple places Krishna indicates that, including in chapter 13. We should understand this knowledge that's being presented in chapter 13 is to help us be very clear about bhakti and take proper shelter, not improper or misguided shelter. Take shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Sarva Chetreshu, the knower of all fields of activities. We take shelter of Him. And distinct from Him are matter and the individual knower. We respect the individual knower, we respect matter, and we worship the Personality of Godhead in devotion. It lends strength to bhakti. It helps one, in the language of nectar and devotion, it may help one get a foothold in bhakti. But the essence is the bhakti. Okay, so 25 after the hour, I'll end there and see if there's any questions or comments, anyone? Up front. I must compliment whoever is taking care of the children downstairs. It's a lot different than it normally is. Thank you, whoever's doing that.
Today is an Easter day, so they're egg hunting.
Easter egg.
Oh, that they're out looking for. Okay. Yes, Hare Krishna.
Aren't we all aspiring puppets as opposed to real puppets? Because Radha Ravi was a real book, the Krishna, but aren't we all aspiring puppets?
I would hope so. But we're engaged in bhakti by her mercy. We're like little bhaktas. She's big bhakti.
So we cannot really call ourselves as bhakti.
Yes, you can. I'll call you as a bhakti. You can call yourself something else. One who's... Let me ask you, so, in response to your question. A, B, C, D, or all of the above? Now listen. What is a tulsi? A. Little seed. B. Only when there's a little sprout, and that's tulsi. Only when there's, that's B. Or C. When there's lots of leaves and branches of the tulsi. Or four. When it's manjaris and producing seeds and but a full mature tulsi plant or all of the above. Okay, so there's the answer to your question.
Maharaj, this Mayavadis you just mentioned, so I always have this question. They say they merge into Krishna or Parambrahma. So do they have a process of demerging, or once this merge is merged?
That's it. It's one way. In fact, they say that actually there isn't anything else than that, anyways. There's only one thing. You can't have before and after. A logical flaw to say all there is Brahman, and then so once you merge with Brahman, you're always merged with Brahman. So what about now? what's the condition of being covered if all there is Brahman? How did we get covered? And the answer they give, well, it just doesn't exist. It's just illusion. Okay, it's just illusion. Then illusion covers Brahman, so illusion is greater than Brahman. No, illusion doesn't exist. Anyone else? Yes, behind you, right behind you.
Prabhu, when you read Bhagavatam, we find when Lord Krishna kills Sisubala.
Yeah.
And he is there, but his soul that came and made it with Krishna himself.
With his body.
Krishna body, he has body and soul, everything is same.
Yeah, so what's your question?
My question is, Sisubala made it with Krishna himself. So in which way? Sisubala's soul merged with Lord Krishna himself.
With his body.
So in that case, Mayavadi seems to be correct, isn't it?
No.
What?
Nice question. Take the microphone from him. Happy Easter. Refer to the section of Chaitanya Charitamrita. You'll enjoy reading this because of the question. I'm sure that you'll enjoy reading this. Where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is discussing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about mukti. And he discusses that there are two types of mukti. Excuse me. Most people think of mukti as sayuja, although there's five types of mukti. So the five types of mukti, the four other types besides sayuja, which means merging, become a resident on the same planet as the Lord, have a form like the Lord, have opulences like the Lord, become an intimate associate of the Lord. Sarupya, Samipya, Sarshti, Salokya. For Vaishnava kinds of liberation, one impersonal kind of liberation. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, great scholar, says, when people hear mukti, they just think of this one, merging. And then he says of the two, of within merging, there's two, where one becomes one with the effulgence of the Lord, and the other is one becomes one with the body of the Lord. Of those two, wishing to become one with the body of the Lord, like happened to Shishupala, is most abominable. Because they see the form of the Lord, they want to become one with the form of the Lord. Now, what is that liberation? He's accepting them because they have a... There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. What's the verse? Yayatam mam prapadyante tamstadaiva pajamyaham. Are you familiar with the verse? In the verse, Krishna is saying, as they prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So someone wants to merge with, and Krishna accommodates that. Now, he accommodates within his effulgence. And Shishupal, he was so inimical. He was one with Krishna in animosity. So Krishna allowed him to enter into his form. But now, what does that mean? Because Krishna is not a contaminated entity. And Shishupal was a contaminated entity. He was very sinful. But when Shishupal was killed with a Lord Sudarshan Chakra, all of his sinfulness, all of his propensity for sinful activity was annihilated, along with the reactions, both. So Krishna accepted him in that position. Now, what the Brahma Jyoti is constituted of, scriptures say, is countless numbers of living entities. Are you familiar with the argument in modern science about light, whether it's a particle or a wave? You're familiar with that argument. So one, not the only, but one conception of the Brahmajyoti is it's particles of spirit packed together, very tightly, tightly, tightly packed. And one jiva may pack in with those packed up living entities and merge with the Brahmajyoti. That's Sayujya Mukti. Now with the body of the Supreme Lord, which is what your question is, it's not possible for jiva tattva to become Vishnu tattva. Jiva tattva remains jiva tattva in the conditioned or the liberated state. Just as the jiva that's in the conditioned soul, the jiva that's merged with the Brahmajyoti, or the jiva that's merged with the body of Krishna is jiva tattva. The distinction remains, just like the commentary that we read. Although they may mingle, they're distinct. But it's the disdain back to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is it's awful. Because in that position of Sayuja, there's no service. There's no distinction as in service between the servitor, that's us, and the served, that's Vishnu, or Vishnu Tattva, or Krishna. That sense of service is lost. So he considers it hellish. Abominable. No service? Awful. And Lord Chaitanya was amazed. He said, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you used to be such a staunch impersonalist, and now you can't even dare hearing the word mukti. You want it to be bhakti instead of mukti. Because they're service. So there's the distinction. The living entity that enters into the Brahmajyoti, or the living entity that Sayuja merges with the body of Krishna, still maintains his jiva tattva status. But his individuality is lost, his modality of service is lost, no love, no happiness of service. It's like, Prabhupada likens it sometimes to being in a prison, in solitary confinement, in a padded cell, in a straitjacket with blinders and a gag in your mouth. And that's happiness. It's misery. It's great punishment. Okay. One more, if there's any one more. You have something? No. Okay, no more. So we'll have Arti. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.